Hello, and welcome to Unsheathed, with your hosts, Kyle Gold and Cam Hirosaki. We hope that you enjoy the program. Please stick around afterwards. There'll be cake and blowjobs.
Brains.
Brains.
This is Zombie Kyle Gold.
And Undead Cam Hirosaki.
And we are at a very special episode of Unsheathed in a indiscreet location.
Yes, very indiscreet.
Yes. Yeah. We're here at Rainforest in the beautiful city of, I believe this is actually the city of SeaTac, Washington.
It's everything I've seen calls it that.
So we're here with an actual audience, which is the first time we've ever done that on the show. So this is a How to Write Furry Erotica panel, which we have taken over and perverted to our own ends. And we are going to sit here and record people for about as long as it takes, I guess. So we just want to start off taking questions? Or did we have something prepared to talk about?
I just wanted to point out that for all the people who are listening at home and not here, the audience can see that I do, in fact, have my traditional podcasting wine.
He does.
In addition to that, I am also fueled by hard liquor this evening. So, if anyone wants to do shots with me in the bar after this, I'll be in the bar.
Hey, come up to my room. I got some of that bacon vodka.
And we're
paying for it.
We're also joined actually by an at-risk panther who is not the not cast at-risk panther, but who is going to be helping us get some questions from the audience. So welcome to you. And, of course, as always, we have our tech-savvy wolf who's supplied the wine. So do you guys have questions, or do you want to just listen to us talk for a little while before you come up with anything?
Talk first.
All right. How to write furry erotica. Sit down at the computer and type a furry erotica story until it's done. The end.
Nice. Yeah. That's what I've been doing wrong.
That's what I've been doing wrong.
It's funny because writing erotica for me is one of the easiest things to do, but it's also one of the hardest things to do because generally most people write what they want to read, and that is also the case with me. I write things that I would want to read. The tricky part is turning, and that's usually pretty easy, and you can see the results up online of people who just write down, you know, their own little fantasies as they're played out, and that's fine, and that's cool, that's what they are. The tricky part is turning that into a story that other people are also going to want to read. And there's a couple of things that that I think that I can do that I can talk about. And most of it involves the characters of the story, because really the characters are the heart of any story. If it's just a sort of description of mechanical acts and, as people call it, slot A into tab A into slot B, people don't really have a reason to care about it. If it's characters that whose well-being is all tied up in how these events and transactions and, you know, fluid exchanges actually go, then that gives the audience an investment beyond just the actual erotica.
Yeah, and to that further point, the whole, if it's just plain old, here's non-context porn, you're better off just looking at pictures anyway.
Well, which is true.
Yeah, well,
but there are things that words can convey a little better than pictures. If it's a 2,000-word story, you're better off looking at two pictures, right?
Are they both hot?
Well, yeah, I guess. So, do you want to run and get a question from the back? He has a question all the way in the back.
Technical difficulty. So that microphone's not working now. So
okay.
Just point that to them or repeat the question.
Okay.
So question. I'm mainly an artist, but I am putting together a comic book. Is going to have some erotic essence to it. Is there a difference in writing comic book erotica as opposed to say, like a novel or short story?
I'd say you have less of an opportunity to explore the psychology of sex in a graphic novel because you're limited to the internalization. You can really only show things through visuals and through dialogue. It's a lot more difficult to get into the thought process when you have a visual medium, I think.
I would say it's not necessarily more difficult. It's just done in a different fashion. What you're going to want to do is play around with a lot of the regular comic conventions, which is show a contrast, things people are saying versus what their expressions are when they say them. And you can use those visual cues in comics, things that are happening and reactions that the audience might expect versus the reactions that are actually on the page. I would personally resist the temptation to make page after page after page of, you know, just the highly detailed sexual encounters and close-up penetration shots and stuff like that. But certainly...
You're going to get bored of drawing that over and over again, though.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to one of the first furry, explicit furry comics, Omaha the Cat Dancer. If you go back and look at some of those old issues and see how Reed Waller did it, those are really good guidelines, I think.
And he now has it in a collected version that's still being published.
Yeah, they're still selling. I still go into comic stores and see them, so that's it's very cool for him.
And they're about to publish the fifth and final, or the final complete novel.
So, yeah, so and that's still going. You can find that in stores. That's probably, I'm trying to think of other...
What was it called?
Reed Waller's Omaha the Cat Dancer. That's been around for, it's been around for as long as I've been in the fandom.
Know your roots.
Yeah. It's old school, but it's still out there. It's like you said, it's still being sold, so...
Yeah, this one is a collector. They don't sell individual comics now, but they sell the...
They sell the bound ones. So... Hang on. Yep.
I got a little question about using technical terms versus using slang terms, like saying things such as penis and vagina versus words like cock and cunt and stuff like that. Some people I've talked to say that using the technical terms lends a more professional air to it, while other people seem to feel that using professional terms makes it sound a bit like you don't really know what you're doing too much. Like, you read about it instead of actually done something like that. What's your thoughts?
I will never get tired of throwing the word cock around the page, like, over and over again. Now, I think this is more this is a matter of tone, and I don't think it's a matter of there's a right or a wrong answer. I think that the terminology you use definitely helps to set up the tone of the story. If you want it to be more cold and clinical, you can do that. If you want it to be more just sort of like filthy and raw and immediate, that's another option.
Yeah, and I think personally I don't like using the technical terms. It feels like you're putting the reader kind of at a distance from the story because they're not, you know, nobody in the bedroom says, you know, oh, touch my penis. You know, the people all use slang terms. I mean, maybe people do say that, but maybe that's an indication
I would lose my erection almost immediately.
And that is a sad state for an otter to be in.
I know. I'm just saying.
Fortunately, it doesn't happen to foxes.
Hello, wine.
I think really what you have to look at in the story is the tone of the story, and how the characters in the story would talk. Even if you're doing it in third person, stories have a definite voice. And this gets into a whole mess of stuff that isn't necessarily directly related to erotica, but character voice is the personality that comes through in the narrative. And whether or not that is related to a specific character, like in first-person narratives, the voice of the narrative is the voice of the central character. Third-person narratives, you can play a lot with having the sort of invisible narrator have a voice which is separate from the characters in the story. And the terms that you want to use in writing these scenes are whatever would fit well with the voice of the story. So if you have kind of a... And I actually see this a lot in erotica, where people will have this very definite tone, and perhaps it's... I'm trying to think of something that would be a good contrast, like a you know, British school, it's like a British school thing, and so they'll be saying, and, you know, Joe went lightly down the stairs, and then, it, you know, in the middle of some sex scene, they'll throw in some really raunchy slang term, and it just doesn't fit, and it throws you right out of the story.
The other thing to point out is when it comes to furry writing specifically, there are a number of colorful euphemisms that we have the ability to come up with. Be careful about making it too silly, because that'll pull a reader right out as well.
Yeah, and you can always come up with your own, and if you establish it in the story, that can work really well. If you just sort of pull it out of thin air, and you're going to really either confuse the reader or make him laugh, and, you know, you want to be careful about that. One thing that I do want to point out is we use the word sheath a lot. We toss around the word sheath because most of the characters I write about have sheaths.
It's in our name.
It is. But not all animals have sheaths. And there are, you know, you may or may not care about that, but if you're caring about anatomy with the furry animals, you should make sure that the terms apply to the animal you're writing about.
And to that point, it's still perfectly legitimate if you're going to be writing your anthropomorphic characters without them. I mean, if you want them to just have...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's...
Just
I
you
see
can draw
the
them with human genitals or not.
I see the argument all the time about, oh, your anatomy isn't correct. I'm like, well, dogs also don't walk on two legs and speak English, so, I mean, I don't know what correct means in this case.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny, Kyle actually, he didn't used to make fun of me, but he used to always point out that I didn't mention a lot of animal-specific anatomy when it came to, you know, descriptions like that, and he was always curious as to why, and then he corrupted me, and anyone who's read my more recent stuff knows that I do not shy away from that at all anymore.
You've seen the light.
With some races that are just a bit too far from human anatomy?
It depends. And, you know, that's an interesting point, actually, which goes into how furry do you want to make your story? It's certainly legitimate to just put the animal features in there because you like them and that's what the characters have. It's maybe a little more interesting to have the animal features be pertinent to the story. One of the really popular ones, which I think I've done on a couple occasions, is people, a non-canid with a canid for the first time going, what the hell is this knot thing happening? You've got all kinds of possibilities with other animals, but I mostly write canids, so.
Yeah, the main thing I was talking about, the thing where it's kind of necessary is creatures like salamanders and stuff where they really don't use the same method that we do, so it'd just be too weird and different for most readers.
Which would be an interesting point in a story. I mean, if you had a salamander and a otter who fell in love, how would they have sex?
I really think that this is really all just a matter of it boils down to the degree of anthropomorphism that you want to adapt for the story. And for many stories, it's not even going to matter what you do. I mean, if it's not going to be relevant and you don't describe it, I mean, there's perfect leeway where if the mechanics of the sex aren't so, you know, critical to what you're saying, you can just leave the descriptions out and the reader can imagine what they want there, and there's nothing to contradict it one way or the other.
And that's a great tool to use when you're writing stories is you don't have to describe everything. I was talking about this a little earlier today. All writing is a balance. You need to balance between giving the reader too much description so that they get kind of bored, or not enough description that they get lost and don't know what's happening. And then there's a little sweet spot, so to speak, where the reader has enough information to envision the scene, but not so much that it's kind of overwhelming them. And that applies to erotica and sex scenes as much as it does to anything else you write. I have a question
up
here.
We were talking about tone a little bit earlier, and One thing I've been sort of wondering about is I've been reading Nancy Kress's book on tone, called Characterization and Tone, and she was talking a lot about how characterization and tone get defined a lot in a couple of critical moments: fights, death, and sex. And she went into great detail talking about how to talk about sex depending on what your goals are. And then right as she got up, she said, yeah, your goals can basically be, you can be using sex to deepen a relationship, you can be using sex to show conflict, or you can be writing sex for pornography. And that was the entirety of what she said about it. And that was really not very useful because, in fact, I am writing sex for pornography. And, you know, clearly it is, you know, different than writing sex for, you know, these, I don't want to say deeper motivations, because I think pornography is a pretty deep motivation.
Well, I mean, even pornography itself, it comes down to different motivations. I mean, do you want it to be, you know, arousing because it's hot? Do you want it to be arousing because it's dirty and wrong? I mean, there's...
So the question was... is there a different? What kind of difference is there between writing sex for conflict versus deepening a relationship versus pornography? And why is I think sort of implicit in the question was, why is pornography kind of seen as a not as valid or not as useful as the others?
Why it's seen as not as valid? I'm just wondering, how do you do it?
How do you do it?
She sort of shied away from giving advice in that one area, and it's like, no, that's what I was looking for.
So how do you use sex to write? How do you write sex for pornography as opposed to those other?
How do you write sex to be hot as opposed to convey something in your story or to deepen your characters or whatever?
The way that I always do it, it's and again, I can only speak to what I find hot for me and what other people have told me that's really hot. But the way that I do it in my stories is filtered through the experiences of the characters.
Mm, yeah.
If it's a lot of just, you know, then, you know, he touched and stroked and then this happened and then he put his mouth there and then this happened and you're not getting so much of the, it's not that hot. But if you incorporate the character's reactions and feelings to what's going on, then you sort of pull the reader in sympathetically to feeling at least a little bit of the same thing.
Yeah, and this comes back to the, I mentioned, you know, writing about the psychology of sex earlier. If you can put the filter of why the character thinks it's hot, that'll project itself onto the reader's experience, just with any emotion you're putting through your character.
Yeah, exactly.
Really.
And I've written about fetishes that I don't particularly have. Because I've written a lot of stuff and it gets boring if I just write the same stuff over and over again. And also because I'm curious a little bit about, you know, some people find this really enticing and really hot and, you know, what is it about that? And so I write a scene in which these things happen and these characters do have sex in this particular way or in this particular fashion. And, you know, from the character's point of view, I just write that, you know, they find it really hot to do this. And, you know, comes across. I don't know. What else? Anything else?
You summed up my feelings on that, I think.
All right.
I do not disagree. Circle gets the square.
So, how do you associate, like, random sex scenes and being different from, like, climax sex scenes to the point to where... Like, there's some points where random sex scenes happen, and it's kind of surprising while at the same time exciting. But I haven't really figured out a way to make that happen without it being entirely random and not exciting. So, you know.
So, the question was, how do you just sort of insert a random sex scene, but make it pertinent to the story, make it exciting?
Yeah.
I would say if it's a long enough story that the scene itself can just sort of be random, I would almost just say skip it and don't do it. If it's
yeah,
a shorter piece and it's just sort of about the sex happening, it's easier to shoehorn in.
Yeah, I would kind of say if you're shoehorning it in, you should think a bit more about the context. Usually you go in with the thought that, you know, you're writing this story and there's going to be sex in it, which is an interesting sideline to erotica. Is usually when you write stories, you have kind of a story in mind, like, you know, the characters start out here, they're going to undergo this journey, and then they're going to end up here. And you may know what kind of touchstones are along the way. When you set out to write an erotica story, you're like, well, characters are here, and there's going to be sex, and there's going to be sex in here, and you know that going into it.
And then
so
there
I think,
was sex.
And then there was, and there was sex.
And it was good.
So I think to make it pertinent to the plot, you really have to make it reasonable to the character. And I go back, I will hasten to say my theories of writing are not the only ones out there by a long shot, but I tend to be very character focused in my stories, and I think the best erotica that I've read has been character focused, because at the core of it, sex is about two people or three people or four people sharing something with each other that they don't share with everyone. And so secrets come out, as you know, as we were saying here earlier, conflicts come out, relationships change. And so what you want to do is put the sex in a story at the point where you want to bring out a conflict, at the point where you want to bring out a relationship. But at the same time, you want to be conscious of the pacing of the story, where you don't want there to be, well, let's do three sex scenes in a row, and then I'll have three chapters with nothing. And that feels a bit artificial, but the reader picks up on those things. And I've been guilty in the past of oversexing or undersexing some of my stories. But it's one of those things where you want to build up tension, have a resolution, whether the sex is part of the tension, and then there's a released from it, or whether the sex is part of the relaxing after the tension, that's for you to decide. And those are two very different scenes. But, you know, I would, you know, make it important to the characters at the right time. Make it what the characters would do, and be sure you're also thinking what complications are going to arise from that.
Yeah, and I think that once you've, if you're writing a longer piece and there's going to be multiple instances of sex, once you've established what the purpose is, and once you've addressed that in the narrative, and like you've had the sex scene that sort of brings out what you need to, if that's going to happen again, you can just sort of fade to black. It's like what you did in Vol, in sort of like the middle part of that story. There's a lot of fade to blacking that you do, because the actual, you know, you've already established what that relationship is about, and you don't need to see the graphical details over and over again.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that succeeded as well as I wanted it to. The idea,
I think it worked.
The idea behind that was more, I was showing more details of the encounters that meant less, and when it came to something that meant, that was more personal to a relationship, I kind of faded out on the details of it, because it was more important to the characters, and I wanted it to feel more personal and something that they didn't want to share with the reader. And they said, okay, well, you know, you've seen this a couple times, now this is private.
Okay, well, I guess you would know your motivation better than I would.
Like I said, I don't know if it succeeded very well or not, but I tried a lot of things with that book, and not all of them succeeded, but...
You know what, it was your first book, and it was still very good, so...
Well, thank you for that.
Not really a writing thing, more of a slight technical on publishing, getting published. Is there any sort of...
Sure.
I've been writing off and on. I don't have anything worth publishing right now. I'd love next year to be on the, you know, other side of the dealer's table selling something, a book or a small collection of stories.
Well, you sort of hit the first point right there, is get something that's worth publishing. Write something that's worth publishing. That's step one.
So the question is about getting published. How do you once you've got your stories out there, how do you get them published?
Especially
furry erotica.
Pretty niche market there.
It is. It's more popular than you might think, given, you know, we're sitting here at 9 o'clock at night when there's parties going on outside and dances and whatnot, and we've got 25, 30 people in here listening to a couple of writers talk about writing porn, so... I don't know. There's some demand for it out there, for sure.
So I guess my advice is figure out first what is going to publish the type of story you're going to write. There are a few markets to choose from. Rather different publications to choose from. Look at those, see what would be appropriate, and look at their submission guidelines, send it in. Before you do that, though, make sure, write the story. You know, are you happy with it? Send it to a few people that you trust to give you feedback. You know, get a consensus of, okay, you know, I've written this, I've revised it, I've edited it to the point where, you know, I think this is good. And, you know, be confident in it yourself. Don't try to convince yourself that it's not good enough to be published, because if you don't think it's good enough, nobody you send it to is going to think it's good enough.
Right.
And, you know, send it out. You know, if the editor is, you know, somebody who's willing to give you feedback on it to, you know, make it better, you know, follow their, you know, advice. If, you know, they happen to, you know, pass on it, you know, try again with somebody else, or try again, you know, when they do their next issue with a different story.
Or put it up online for free. I mean, yeah. part of what I've done, and whether, you know, intentional or not, it kind of worked, is I wrote a crap load of stories, and I edited them. I made them stories that I was proud of, and I said, you know, there's nowhere I'm going to be able to publish these, so I'm just going to throw them up online. And a lot of the following, I think, that I get is from people who find a couple of those stories and then say, wow, I want to read more of this. And then they say, oh, there's a novel. And, you know, the novels that we publish aren't cheap, but at the same time, people are saying, well, you know, I got all this stuff free online, and so maybe it's not that much to buy a book. But definitely the way the internet's changed publishing, and it's changed writing, and just changed everything, you almost have to have a presence online now. And it's not a waste of your time to spend a couple years putting stories up, talk to the people who read them, find out what they like. Don't go out of your way to sort of push your stories on people, but if you, as you see different venues to contribute some writing, or, you know, just say, hey, I've got this story, I've got this set of stories over here. And eventually, you know, in the process of doing this, also send stories to the anthology publications. There's Sofulf Press Heat publishes adult material once a year. Bad Dog Books has anthologies on and off. Fang is their adult anthology, and that is supposedly coming back next year.
Erotic publications. Those are the two that come to mind off the top of my head.
There's also anthology projects out there every now and then that people will just talk about online. I've seen.
Just keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, I've seen people say, I'm putting together a book of such and such. And the other thing you can do is, we talked about in the Getting Published panel, FurPlanet.com. FurPlanet offers kind of a print-on-demand service. They're not so much moderated. They'll look at your stuff and they'll say, okay, you know, it's punctuated correctly and it's well-written. And, you know, they'll just print it for you and sell it for you. And they don't print up big runs of it like Sofulf does, so they don't have any overhead to lose. So they'll print up like 3-4 copies and take it to a con, and if it sells, they'll print up, you know, 5 or 6 copies to go to the next one. And so that's a good place to go if you want to just get your stuff out there and print.
And also, just to sort of close this, there's no shame in, you know, okay, I wrote this story and no one wanted to publish it, so I guess I'll just post it online. And there's nothing wrong with that. I have way more stories that are just posted online than have been published anywhere. And you know, even after I start getting things published, I don't think of it as a failure. As, okay, you know, I wrote this story, I'm just going to put it online. It's just a matter of, you know, okay, you know, it's, you know, you have an audience and you sort of have this, you know, this is, you know, what you're doing. You get your work out there, and, you know, you have an audience, and you have to satisfy them somehow or another.
And they're great to give you feedback.
Yeah.
They may not give you good, like, critical feedback you'd get from a workshop, but people will write in and tell you, I get comments like, I really love this character. I love how this character, you know, handled the situation.
Please write 4 sequels with him in it. I mostly do short stories and novellas.
The question was about our specialization in
comics,
graphic novels, or novels, or short stories. So just to repeat that, because their questions aren't coming up.
I apologize for jumping on the questions each time they come up. I'm used to a different format on this.
You're also drinking.
That's not the reason. I'm just oblivious.
I was giving you an out.
We still have half a bottle of wine left, and I'm not even the only one who's drinking it.
So, go ahead.
So, yes. About...
Answer the question.
About form. Yeah, I mostly write short stories and, you know, longer short stories, which there's not really a good word for.
Novella?
But when you get something, you know, it's like 12,000 words. That's technically
that's
a short story. Yeah, okay. But that's terminology people probably don't know.
Yeah, I mean...
If you tell a random person on the street, oh, I wrote a novelette, they have no idea what you mean.
No, but they get the idea. It's like a little novel kind of thing. Even though these are the... I mean, what we usually go by is the Hugo Award categories, which are short stories up to 7,500 words, I think. Novelette is 7,500 to 15,000. Novella is 15 to 40. And I think novels are over 40. Even though 40-something... 40 seems really short for a novel, but... Yeah. I think it is considered a novel by Hugo standards. 40 or 50,000.
It's either 40 or 50, yeah. It's one of those two.
What would be considered longer than a novel?
A really long novel.
Yeah.
The question was, what is considered longer than a novel? And, yeah, a really long novel. They don't give out, otherwise it would be like a trilogy. A Neal Stephenson novel.
Do you
So I write novels and short stories and novellas and novelettes and whatever. I mean, I say the story finds its own length. I am working on a graphic novel project that will be out next summer. I've done the script for it, and it's now in the hands or paws of the artist who is going to work on doing some layouts, and then he and I'll go through and we'll do the final dialogue. And that we're hoping to have that out for Anthrocon next year. So, yeah. The question was about pricing and specifically what a full color 20 page quote mediocre unquote graphic novel would be priced at. And I will say, first of all, you do not describe your own work as mediocre. You say, what would an awesome full color 20 page graphic novel be sold for?
So say it.
What would an awesome graphic novel this fully colored cost?
All right. That's better. Awesome 20-page, fully colored.
We deal
novel.
Only in awesome here at Uncheated.
It kind of depends on a lot of things. I would think full color 20 pages probably $20.
20 to 25,
yeah.
25 would be pushing it. It depends on the actual
pages,
print quality.
20 pages is really short.
It is.
I think the shortest graphic novels I've seen are like 36, 40 pages, something like that. So yeah. 20 is kind of short, I would say, but full color is expensive too. And it depends also on the print run.
Well,
if you're
talking about 10 pages front and back, sorry.
I know. Yeah.
We don't really develop and produce our own material.
Yeah,
so
I'm just going by what we've seen. And I can toss out a couple of prices. Dog's Days of Summer, which was the Blotch graphic novel, is being sold by Soulful for $30, that's 100 some pages, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty long.
Heathen City is about 60.
It's either 60 or 72. I don't remember.
Something like that, and that's being sold for $25.
Yeah.
What other full color ones? Fur Planet has some other full color ones, but I'm not sure what they're being sold for. I think they're like about 15.
If you're printing and producing them yourself, I would say that your guideline wouldn't be as much as so that you're not losing money and that people are still willing to pay for.
Right, and that's
that's how supply and demand works in this.
Yeah, I mean, you go through the process, and when you've got your proof of your graphic novel ready, I mean, pricing is really one of the last things you worry about, but you want to go find out how much it's going to cost you to print. And if you're doing a print-on-demand service, they will tell you it's going to cost you, you know, $12 a copy to print it. And then you say, okay, well, I'll sell it for $15. And
also, neither Kyle nor I are doing what we do to get rich. And if we are, we're doing it very wrong.
We're doing it very wrong. Yes. if I wanted to get rich writing, I would not have started writing gay furry erotica.
I think I've like made like a total of like $150 off my short stories in the last 5 years. It's a great supplemental income.
Oh yeah.
$150 does not buy 5 years worth of booze.
It would for me.
Oh, I want to say I wish I were you, but in this case, no. I'd prefer being me.
Yes.
Whether they come in monetary or liquid form.
And actually, you'll.
I knew I was going to do that at least once tonight. I knew it was going to happen. And as you can see from his... He knows I don't do this on purpose. I honestly just do it. It's just the way my brain is wired.
No, he doesn't. And if you've listened to some of our earlier episodes where he just sort of busts out laughing at something, it's because he said something and I'm like, oh my God, how does he not realize what he just said? And I point it out. But yes, I think he realized it before I did that time.
I should just say, it's like when people say, how did you get into writing furry erotic? I should say, like, I didn't intend to. I just sort of ended up doing it and didn't realize that's what I was doing. It's like, oh, wait, there's totally this sexual tension in the scene that I didn't put in there, and suddenly they're fucking, and I didn't
Hey, wait, I wrote about a cock.
Oh, well, yeah, he is going down on him there, isn't he?
How long did foreplay last? I mean, should the foreplay not be as long as the actual... I mean, in sex or in a story, if you're just, I mean, or should it, because you're trying to build up the suspense of the...
So the question is, how long should foreplay last and when you're writing a scene as opposed to the actual sexual act itself, which orgasm. Some people consider foreplay part of the sexual act, but...
I would say it is.
I think, you know, like anything else, there's no real easy answers, and also, yeah, it also depends on when you say foreplay stops and sex begins, but...
And if you have a really short fuse and the foreplay is the only part you really get to enjoy.
Not gonna make a comment on that. I would say, again, it depends on what you're trying to relate in the scene. If you're trying to put the characters in a position where the, you know, if you're writing a scene with two characters and the main character has been, like, waiting for this to happen for the whole story, then you might want to draw it out. Like, he still can't believe this is happening. He still can't believe this is happening until it finally does.
And then he comes before they actually get to penetration.
And then he comes, yeah. That's
great for him.
But if it's an established couple and... You just want to show they're making up after a fight, or they're just relaxing together after a stressful time, or something like that. Then the foreplay follows predictable patterns, and you probably don't need to take that long with it. It depends on how you want to pace the scene.
What do you want to emphasize? Where do you want the arousal to be? Where do you want the emotional content to be? And I think that it's what you're trying to do with the scene.
So pacing. Best part for it. You don't want to kind of drag it on forever, because then it's...
Yeah. Much like actual sex, the pacing is very important.
if you don't
want it to drag on forever.
Yes.
Oh.
And if you're getting bored, you're doing it wrong.
I'm not bitter.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Uh-huh. It's actually something that I've just been wondering for a while. Since you're talking about sort of how much it, you know, comes out of characters and how much it, you know, sort of evolves naturally, have you ever set out to write erotica and missed?
I have.
Have we ever set out to write erotica and missed? Yes. And I think you have a better story than I do about that. I will just say my aim is a little better.
I don't know if I'm comfortable being in front of this microphone anymore. yes, actually, I did do that, where I was actually solicited to write an erotic story and ended up getting through it. And, you know, by the time I was done, I was like, you know, there's not really, like, any point to have, like, a big, you know, hot little sex scene in here. But it's still a good story, so, like, okay, here you go. Oh, yeah, by the way, I didn't write the story you asked me for.
I was actually thinking of the one you wrote where it started off being just a little short story, Pressure.
Oh, Pressure. Okay, I was thinking of the one from like 5 years ago.
Oh, no,
the
no one I, was that, thinking yeah. of, I was thinking of Pressure.
Oh, yeah, Pressure. Yeah, where I basically, I had just come back from vacation and just like, you know, a number of things in my head. And I had been very stressed out at this time of year just because of, you know, the RL and that sort of thing. I was like, you know, to reward myself, I'm just going to
damn write real this. Life.
Damn you, real life. You know, to reward myself, I was like, okay, I'm going to go and I'm just going to write, like, you know, like a 4,000 or 5,000 word, you know, just like, just quickie, like, okay, like, hot erotic story. Just like, okay, like, sex, 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 done, the end. And I got about 1,000 words into it and I was like, oh, damn it. This is like some big, long, deep, you know, motivational, you know, character-based story that turned out to be like 18,000 words, and there's actually no actual sex in it. Which I'm really happy with how it came out. I think it's probably the best story I've written this year. It's really the only big one.
Yeah, it was this year, actually.
Because I started writing it after I got back from Furry Fiesta.
Yep. For my part, I've had several times, mostly in the course of writing the novels. The novel is coming out in January, Shadow of the Father. Has very little sex actually in it. And I think the scenes that are in there are good, but it just ended up not being really as raunchy as sort of the last book I wrote.
But there is awkward sexual tension between the characters.
There is awkward sexual
Plenty
tension.
Plenty of it.
So that counts for something.
Oodles. But,
and also, because someone else brought it up earlier, so I'm thinking about it right now, when we did our little story exchange last year, I guess it was, and we decided to write stories about each other, I'd intended to just write a fairly embarrassing story about Kam Hirasaki where he's wandering through a world where lots of sex is going on and he gets to have a lot of it. And it turned into actually similar to yours, kind of a more of a emotional story with a message, and it turned out to be a message about writers and writing and their interaction with the characters as they write them, which I hadn't intended as I was starting out. So I don't know if that's a miss, but it's probably not a bullseye.
Well, actually, and I actually was really happy with how that came out because I actually thought that the emotional message was really touching, and it, you know, it certainly resonated with me, which I think was, I hope that's what you were aiming for. And it was also really hot. So
considering it was about you.
Yes. I don't know. I think that you hit your mark with me better than the mark I hit with you.
You are always welcome to try again.
Okay.
But then you realize I'll have to also.
Okay, you know, we have a little scoreboard we can put up here behind us on the...
Or we could just say we could do one a year, but we're running out of time this year.
That's true. And the holiday season's coming up, and we're all really busy then.
That is true. Busy, stressful, in need of release.
Kit's always getting me drunk.
Ask the crowd for what?
Should you write the story? Should they write a story again?
So, Kit thinks we should ask you guys, should we write another pair of stories about each other again?
Yeah!
Of course!
All right. Well, now we have to.
I think we're committed. And yes. I think I'm going to end up being committed.
I was going to say, if we're not now, we soon will be.
Yeah,
let's have a brainstorm right here.
We got a question in back.
Right. I write a lot of stories kind of randomly. I'll just wake up at like 4 a.m. I have a story. Go write it. I write these things rather randomly as well. Said that. But have you ever written a story where it has a storyline and then you go to the sex scene? Read the sex scene, you go back and read it, the sex scene completely overshadows the story in level of quality.
The question is, have we ever written a story where the sex scene was way better written than the rest of the story? I believe is that the interpretation there. Wow.
I suppose if you're going back and reading your own work and you're just thinking, will you hurry up and get to the sex already? Maybe as the writer, you should just hurry up and get to the sex already. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I'm sure I've done something like that. It sounds familiar. It sounds like the sort of thing I would have done during the Erotic Furry Writing Challenge days when we had like a prompt and we had 3 weeks to write a story and I was just like, okay, I'm throwing something out. And the whole idea of that prompt was just get something out, get something done, get something written. So I know there were at least a couple cases where I liked the sex better than the rest of the story. So it happens. And then you just kind of go back and figure out, either you figure out how can I fix the rest of the story, how can I bring it up to par, or you say, I'll just, you know, cut the rest of the story out and this will just be a sex story. I don't know.
So you're saying you tend to write about what you want to read, and I'd agree that's true. So when you're in the middle of the sex scene, how do you keep writing?
You wanna...
So the question is, you want to, you know, write what you'd want to read. So, you know, when you're in the middle of, you know, doing the sex scene, how do you motivate yourself to keep writing?
As opposed to putting your paws to other use.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. This was actually a topic I wanted to bring up independently before we even brought the questions up, so I'm actually glad you're asking this. And not like that. I'm glad you're asking this. Hold on. I was actually
Kurosaki just made a very distinctive gesture for those of you listening at home.
Yes, and it did not involve the wine. No, so I was actually just talking to another fellow furry erotica writer earlier this week, and I was saying, hey, you know, I've read some of your, you know, work. You know, I don't see a lot of it, but what I have seen, I really like. And the response he gave back was, you know, like, I get these ideas for stories, but I don't post most of them because, you know, I get off before I finish writing them, and then I just stop. And that's interesting because for me, writing erotica is not an arousing experience in and of itself, with a few notable exceptions, which I won't tell you which ones they were.
I think all erotica writers have a few exceptions.
Yeah. Try to guess. You're probably better off guessing that than trying to guess what my initials stand for.
Which, by the way, we've not gotten a correct response
yet. We have not gotten a correct response, and it's probably because I'm kind of a jerk in the clues that I gave. But they're legitimate clues, but I...
But anyway, go back to answering the question.
Oh, yeah, back to answering the question before. So how do you... I guess it's, first of all, just if you can put yourself in a mindset to write erotically without being erotically overtaken mentally, then that wouldn't be an issue, I suppose. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, practice. You'll get better at it. It happens to everyone the first time.
Yeah, I mean...
Just do it and get back to writing when you're done and tired.
Don't write when you're tired. I think part of the problem is that the subtext of the question is that if you do take a break in the middle of writing an erotic scene, that your motivation for writing the erotica will kind of be gone when you come back. Or you'll be less in the mood, as it were.
I will say that for what it's worth, every time I've stopped being horny, I am eventually horny again at some point.
Yes.
I've never like gone and just suddenly never been horny again in the rest of it.
Don't stop the fat.
But that does happen to people, actually.
No, yeah, and I, in a legitimate, you know, response to that, and I can see where actually losing the momentum, not in a euphemistic sense, but just losing the momentum of any scene, really, if you can't put yourself back in the mindset you need to be in to write that scene, that's the problem.
Yeah, and I think it's for my own part, it's just sort of a matter of self-control. I mean, there's a lot of times when I'm aroused and don't do anything about it. And writing erotica is not, you know, it doesn't, as you said, it's not always arousing, but it's just like I'm doing something else now.
Yeah. Like I don't need to be worked up to know what a blowjob is like. I mean, I know what goes into it. I understand the concept.
So to speak.
So to speak. Write what you know.
Yes.
Do you guys know any female erotic writers? I mean, we obviously the fandom is made up of mostly males, but do you guys know?
Do we know of any female erotica writers or writers of female erotica?
The answer to both
Poe Tigress writes in the collection X, which I see someone in the audience has right there. She has a second story, and she has a couple stories in Heat.
Yeah.
Who else? And you know, the people there really do a good job of trying to vary up the content, because they're, you know, the fandom is leans kind of gay male, but you know, the people at Heat are very conscious that that's only a part of the fandom, and they try to do straight erotica. There was a lesbian comic strip in the last one, albeit with dildos, but still both girls. But I don't remember who did that comic strip, actually. I don't know if you know.
It wasn't the Tani one, was it?
No.
Tani was the...
The Tani was a three-way.
Oh, that's right. But it had two girls.
It was the birds.
Oh, that one, right. Yeah.
Don't make that face.
The people at home can't see my face.
Just because they're girls.
I wrote a story with a girl just this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a sex story, but it's kind
I wrote
of
a story now. With.
So
I wrote
there.
A story with two girls too. So.
So, quick question. Do you think that you could make a successful story by inserting yourself as a character or otherwise into the story that you're writing?
Do we think a story could be successful inserting yourself as a character in the story you're writing?
I think we've just demonstrated that we're better at inserting each other. Yeah, no. That one wasn't that. For those of you,
you just
again,
broke our tech savvy wolf.
Yeah, the reaction there was more to Kit than it was to me.
Because it was.
That one was a blatant setup, and
yeah,
I apologize. I cannot feign ignorance on that one.
I think. In a way, I'm gonna take kind of the cop-out response. In a way, every time you write a story, anytime you write a story, every character, you're putting a bit of yourself into that character. To the more pertinent point of putting your persona or avatar or whatever you want to say into a story, I think it can be a successful story. One of the fantasy novels that I really like, the protagonist, the author wrote it as a teenager. It's called it was The Infinity Concerto and Serpent Mage were the two books, and then he collected them as Songs of Earth and Power by Greg Baer, who mostly writes science fiction. But he wrote in the introduction that he wrote them at 17, and that basically it was about him and this girl that he was in love with who didn't love him back, and it was all teen angsty, but then he wrapped it in a really cool fantasy story. So it was basically him and all the stuff that he wished would happen to him. But I think that's more what you have to watch out for, is if you put yourself in the story, but you allow yourself to be a character in the story, and you allow, you know, potentially bad things can happen, you don't always get what you want, and if it's a satisfying story, then sure. I mean, that would be my view.
Yeah, as for literally writing myself into a story, I think it'd be way too self-conscious to do that at this point. Now that I actually have... And that's not to say... It's a dumb idea to write yourself into your own erotic stories. I know that if you go to anyone's user account on YifStar or something like that, I guarantee you that about 80% of them, if you look at the very first story they posted, they're in it as themselves, which is where most... I'll admit, you know, it's not online, but the very first erotic story I ever wrote was about me. I mean, shame in it.
There's no shame in it. I may be an exception in that I want to say I don't think I've ever done that specifically.
You just write a ton of foxes.
I just write a ton of foxes, yes. And I did write an entire trilogy about a fox and a white wolf, so.
Mer.
Yeah, mer. anyway, I don't know. Does that help?
Yes. Do you find it difficult to combine humor with erotica?
So the question is, do we find it difficult to combine humor with erotica?
I find it difficult to write humor, just period.
Yeah. My stock answer to that is I think humor is probably the single most difficult thing to write.
Yeah.
And it's deceptive because everyone thinks that humor is really easy, and it's really difficult. That being the case, I like to think I've successfully written a few humorously sexual stories. I've gotten some good feedback on a lot of those.
I think specifically in my case, the League of Canids stories that were published in Heat 4 and 5 with superheroes, they're online too, Don't Blink and Third Date, I think combine some lightness with erotica.
Yeah, for me, I've got The Fox with a Broken Sex Drive, which just from the title alone, if you can't tell that that's supposed to be funny, then you haven't been in the fandom.
And it is.
I wrote that at work.
Did you write your desk husky story at work, too?
I did. I wrote my desk husky story at work, too, which is very appropriate if you have read my desk husky story.
Tilo and the Desk Husky.
Tilo and the Desk Husky. Yeah, it's about an otter at work, which has nothing to do with the previous question about writing yourself into a story, I promise.
Of course not. Perish the thought.
Starting from scratch is kind of... That's got light humor elements of this is how awkward and unintentionally hilarious first-time sex can be. Which I intended it to be funny, and everyone just said, no, that hits way too close to home, and it's just super awkward to the point that it's not hot, just like first-time sex is. Yeah. Which is like, okay, I guess I wrote it a bit too well.
Yeah. I mean, I think inherently there's always something funny about sex. It's just silly. I mean, you know, the things people go through, the act itself are funny, just the fact that you know everyone's letting go and they're not thinking about what they're trying to do or what is this person going to think of me. Or to a certain point they are, but then you move past that. But then also just all the stuff surrounding it. People tell lies about it. People tell stupid lies about it. People get embarrassed about the silliest things while, you know, fessing up to other stuff. And there's so much potential back in that to view it in a humorous light. It's just I find it really hard to write humor. And I have a ton of respect for people that can write humor on a consistent basis because it's really hard. If you think it's hard to write a sex scene that appeals to a lot of people, try writing something that a lot of people find funny. That is way harder.
Yeah, you'll notice that the people who are well known for writing humor tend to be immensely popular because it's just such a hard thing to get right over and over again.
Yeah. We have someone over there in the corner.
How does competitiveness go into writing some of your stories?
How does competitiveness go into writing our stories? You mean between each other or between other writers or between our characters in the story?
Or? That you read probably fat many times, and you just think you have to outdo that somehow.
For me, that doesn't come up with a story that I've that I found written well. For me, it mostly comes up when I read stories that are not written well, and I think, you know, damn it, this could have been such a great story. And then I feel like I have to write something that does it justice.
Like, this is a hot idea that is wasted on a crappy story or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, honestly, like, my story ideas come from wherever my story ideas come from in the back of my head. I don't think I've ever intentionally decided to come up with a story idea ever.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Which is just a sign that there's something wrong with you and that you're probably a writer.
We do. Yes.
Those two things are not mutually exclusive at all.
We do work together pretty closely on stories a lot of the time. We trade drafts back and forth before we show them off. And so I think there's a certain amount of overlap that's crept into our stories. I know that I wrote something recently, which I've not released because I've submitted it to Heat, but it had a very Hirosaki-like ending.
Oh, God.
And
he made me read that on a plane. It was not a good place to be reading that story. I need more wine.
At least you didn't leave it in the seat pocket of the plane when you deplaned.
Yeah.
Which has happened with one of my books. Somebody left it on a plane. We never heard from it. I was waiting to hear from some airline employee or something like, you know, oh my God, what the hell is this? But I have two questions.
One, what is up with these Fox people having sex? And two, where can I get more of it?
Well, for both answers, go to sofawolf.com.
Have you ever heard that?
We have another one in the back. Hold a sec.
I wrote a story. It was my third or fourth one. And I posted it online. It was dragon character and otter character. And out of all of my other stories, and some of them were even better, the damn thing got more hits than anything else.
Ah.
And I'm like, what the hell? It's not even that good.
So the question is, why do certain stories get more popularity and hits than other stories when, in the mind of the author, they are not as good? this is a subject I believe we're both fairly familiar with.
Well, you're talking about how, like, you know, your otter story, you know, got more hits than anything else, and I believe that Kyle's most popular story on Yivstar's Aquifers has an otter in it, which I guess just says that otters are super hot and everyone loves us.
Write stories about otters.
Write stories about otters.
I'm trying to remember which. There was one story that I wrote that had an unusual tag on it for, because I use the tags on Yivstar, and was it? Oh, it was. It was the Ashley because of the cross-dressing, right? I put the cross-dressing tag on, and it got a ton of hits and a ton of favorites. And it's not I liked the story, but I didn't think it was particularly, you know.
It was cute.
Stood
I liked
out that
it.
Much. It was cute, and it was very different. And it was kind of, you know, fairy tale with sex and cross-dressing, gay sex and cross-dressing, and foxes and stuff.
Yeah.
And weirdly football, but just tangentially.
Yeah, which, you know, cross-dressing, football, it's a theme you've came back to explore later on.
I have. Actually, I wrote that after I think I wrote the
Actually, that's true.
One. But yeah, so certain tags, for whatever reason, and we have not figured this out yet either, certain tags attract attention.
Yeah.
And it may have been that it was a dragon. If you don't normally write stories with dragons, it may have been something else that was in there. It may have been something where one person read it and said, wow, I love this story because of this specific thing, and told all their friends about it, and everybody went to look at it.
So, and speaking about the bit of keywords about how Ashley got a bunch of hits probably because of the cross-dressing tag, this is actually kind of interesting. I think it was either earlier this year or last year, FA released the results of their top 10 search terms. And the number one search term on for Affinity was Vore. And it's not that, oh my god, everyone on FA is into Vore, or that the majority of what is on FA is Vore. It's just that people who are into a specific fetish will search really hard to find that one thing.
Over and over.
Exactly, because that's what you're into. And if it's not something, Yivstar, if you're just looking for, like, all right, I want to see two furry guys having sex, you can just browse what's on there and find it. If there's a specific kink or fetish you're into, you have to look for it. And that's when you go through the keywords, that's when you go through search terms, and then suddenly your pool of what you're looking for is much more limited. Yeah. And so the people who are really into that are going to be finding it more reliably than just, okay, you know, like, wolf does a fox in the end, you know.
There's nothing wrong with that story.
No, there isn't.
There's also nothing wrong with wolf does a fox in the end.
Either end, really.
So, yeah, there you go.
Two wolves do a fox.
Or two foxes. Never mind. We're getting way off track here.
No, we're not.
We're about to get way off track. To answer your question more sort of at a high level, if we knew what made one thing more popular than something else, we would be using that knowledge much more than we are now. I mean, we would be like out there selling millions of books. We would be Stephanie Meyer.
Yeah. One of the
but less sparkly.
Sort of to this end, and I've talked about this in my LARB journal, if any of you read that, but I mentioned starting from scratch just now, which is my sort of like college age furry, like first time sex thing, which I'm like, okay, you know, like college age furries, like that's something that, you know, furries can really identify with. This story will be really popular. And then I had my story Stray, which is about, you know, somebody like midlife crisis, like I've been in this, you know, long-term relationship for 10 years, and I have like this weird, you know, like family drama, and like, you know, this sort of like combination, like long-term relationship drama plus midlife crisis, which I don't associate with most of the furry fandom. And that story was over, like, got over twice as many hits as the other one, and that really confused me for the longest time. It's like, why is this story that I don't think my fans can relate to suddenly so popular as opposed to the other one?
And I think a lot of it is if it's something different. And the last story that I posted was called Driftin', and it was about a relationship that was gone kind of cold, and what one of the how they dealt with it, and it tried to be a little more realistic than, oh, my boyfriend doesn't love me anymore, I'm going to go out and, you know, fuck some other guy. And it got a lot more response than I thought it was going to. And I think it's because that subject, the subject of relationships gone cold, isn't handled very much in erotica, because people want to hear about happy times and happy relationships. So if you've written something that was a little bit kind of different, a little bit off the track, maybe it'll just vanish without a trace because no one's interested. But you might also catch a bunch of people saying, wow, there's nothing else like this out there.
Yeah, on that specific topic about, you know, relationships that have, you know, started to, you know, have that happen, that's not covered a lot in erotica, but it's something that I guarantee you almost everyone in this room has experienced and has gone through. And to be able to read something and be able to relate to that is appealing in its own way because, A, you know, it's not something you see a lot, and, you know, B, you know, there's that sort of, you know, like, you know, unique resonance in this new form of, like, putting it in an erotic context.
Right.
We aim to please.
The question is actually that is that how would you feel about personal experiences or experiences that other people have had, putting that into the story that you're writing? You know, have you ever thought about doing that, or you know, or is it all just fantasy experiences that you have in your head?
Do you mean, so the question was, how do we feel about putting personal experiences into the stories, personal experiences that we have had or that we've heard about from other people, either one?
Yeah, or, you know, like, maybe in the celebrity media or just, you know, like.
I don't read so much anymore, but I listened to, Savage Love, and that's actually where Drifting came from, was somebody talking to Dan Savage about, you know, it was a woman who said her husband didn't want to have sex anymore and hadn't wanted to have sex and for like years. And this kind of thing, I could not make that up because I couldn't really conceive of it. But then, you know, she gets into questions of, is it okay for me to go cheat on him? Should I ask him for permission? You know, how should I handle it? But so I listen to advice columns and I kind of take those experiences and use them as fodder for the stories. I have on occasion put into stories some personal experiences. I'm not going to tell you which ones they are.
Likewise.
But yeah, we draw from life because life is stranger than a lot of things we could dream up. And I do recommend advice columns because if you want to hear about the weird and silly and crazy and depressing problems that people have, which are the foundations of conflict, which is the foundation of story, people that are desperate enough to ask a complete stranger how to solve their problems, that's where you're going to hear it.
Yeah. When they say truth is stranger than fiction, no, seriously. I mean, like, I've lived in housing situations, you know, and have had friends and, you know, whatnot, and just, like, looking at their situation where it's like, I could write this exact situation into a story and nobody would believe it.
Yeah.
Like, no, like, people would be like, no, that would never happen. And it's just like, that's what real life does.
Yep. How are we doing on time? We're a little bit over an hour. If people have a couple more questions, we can handle that. If people want to wrap up, we can do a little quick summing up and, get y'all out of here to the. What's going on tonight? Is there a dance?
Yeah.
Oh, two dances.
Sure.
There's a lot of hilarity outside the windows from the pool area, so I suspect there's lots of other fun things going on. So, any last words from the audience?
Great show. We really liked it, Denshi. Thank you so much for it.
Well, thank you all for listening. We appreciate your listening and your participation. And
oh, hello.
Wow.
We has Foxcock.
We does. We've both been rendered temporarily speechless
and
by this.
Hirasaki-san is going to put the microphone
by this
down.
Lovely piece of artwork, which we finally have something to post up on our FA account. We will post it if you're not getting a good look from the back.
I say, sir, if you're taking sketchbook commissions later in the con, let me know where you are.
that's Xavian, Z-A-V-I-A-N. That's your Fur Affinity name as well. Check him out.
He has a good grasp of anatomy. I will tell you that right here.
And so does his character. And so do his characters. Yes, we'll keep it up on the table. If you didn't get a good look in the back, you can come up and take a nice gander at it. And those of you at home, check out the Unsheathed FA page. I'm hoping by the time this podcast is up, we will have the picture up as well. But yeah, so thank you all for coming and spending part of your Saturday night with us. And you have anything else to add?
No, other than just, you know, to second that, you know, I am really thrilled with the turnout tonight.
Yeah.
And has anyone, actually, just real quick, has anyone here not listened to the show before?
Wow.
Wow. That's even more of a surprise than how many people showed up.
Yeah.
Wow, that is...
I didn't even think to ask that.
Yeah, but. No, I hope that you do. You can find us...
Yeah.
For the, did you already give out our?
Yeah, I'll say it again. We're Unsheathed on FA, unsheathedpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send us a question, we read questions on the podcast and answer them.
Yep.
And we talk about erotic furry writing just like we've done here.
We also have our own individual accounts on LiveJournal and FA.
We do. I am Kyle on FA and Kyle Gold on LiveJournal.
And I am KM Hirasaki, all one word on LiveJournal, and KM _ Hirasaki on FA. All
right.
And I, you know, post stories and, you know, journal entries, talk about, you know,
yep, we chat a lot. If people post on live journals, we usually talk back. I try to answer all my emails. And if you have questions about writing, I love to talk about writing. So go ahead and send me questions. KyleGold.com/contact is where you can find my contact info. And go forth and write good furry erotica, and leave your brains up on the table for us, please.
Yeah.
Brains. And with that, we will leave you from Rainforest. Now I'm Zombie Kyle Gold.
And this is Undead Cam Hirasaki signing off from SeaTac.